podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Top Order Podcast, another lockdown edition here from Auckland, New Zealand. We're in level four, the rest of the country moving to level two, but not till 23:59 tonight, Raj. We've got a lot coming up on the podcast this week. We've got some new listeners, which we'll give a shout out to. We're going to talk about Pakistan, the White Ferns, the Black Caps in Bangladesh, and my fellow countrymen have got their arses handed to them again, England, India, all coming up on the Top Order Podcast after this very, very nice sound effect. Lippy, I'll come to you first and foremost. Raj, our resident health and safety expert, and you look after the mailbag and correspondence, all the doting housewives sending in their pictures to you, etc. But also some new listeners in the West Indies, El Salvador, Germany and the UAE as well. So we really are a worldwide cricket podcast, aren't we?
Oh, absolutely. It's really funny for us, I guess, sitting here in Auckland and, you know, I'm sitting in my garage, just sitting here recording on the floor of my garage, and to think that people are listening all over the world is a real buzz for us. So, yeah, we've had some people talk to us from Germany and yeah, like you say, all over the world. And I think just the more chat that we can have with everyone and email us in, we just love to hear where you are and where you're listening. Yeah, great stuff.
Let's move on to some more serious things. So we, I guess to sort of put a little bit of a light on the way we plan the podcast, put together our topics normally a day or two out, but some breaking or relative breaking news with the Pakistan coaching staff, or at least Misbah and Wakar stepping down, COVID victims in terms of, you know, they're citing that as a reason. For that, very quickly, the board have moved Saqlain and Abdul Razak come in as interim coaches. But yeah, be pertinent just to touch on that briefly. Anyone got an eye on that?
Yes. Thanks, Adam. Very interesting developments over the last week or so. Coming back from South Africa, they feel the pressure of that biosecure environment and having to travel so much as an international player or coach. It would be really hard being away from your families for that long. But, you know, let's not get confused. This is definitely a political issue. So we have Ramiz Raja, who's taking over as chairman of the board on the 13th of September. He's publicly said that he doesn't believe Misbah and Wakar are the right men for the job to take Pakistan through. So he stated this publicly. They're about to have a home series. And they're putting their stamp on their team, especially with the lineups that they've chosen for this series, as well as the team that's going to go through to the World Cup 2020. It's a younger team, a different team. So, over to you, Baldy.
That's the thing that confuses me a little bit. If the playing record and the record of the team, particularly since Wakar took over as bowling coach, their fast bowlers have come along in leaps and bounds. We talked about Shaheen Shah Afridi in the podcast last week, and even going right back to his performances here in New Zealand, in New Zealand's tour this time last year, a lot of those fast bowlers have come along in leaps and bounds and have grown tremendously as young cricketers under the tutelage and guidance of Wakar Yunus in particular. So that comment surprises me a little bit. I'm not sure around their batting whether that has developed necessarily under Misbah, but it feels like that he was a pretty solid member of that coaching squad, and it felt like, you know, with Yunus involved and Misbah and all these guys, they had a really quite solid coaching squad of former players who know what the political situation is like in terms of being a cricketer in that kind of hectic environment in Pakistan. And to change again, I'm a little bit concerned and worried about the development of these young players. You know, Pakistan, almost more than any other country, tends to churn through cricketers, particularly fast bowlers. So my concern is with that rotation of coaching, will we see another rotation in their personnel and their test side, which won't be good for the team long term?
Well, look, as we said, it's very much breaking news. I'm sure this story is going to develop. I would say that we interviewed the chief executive of the Pakistan Cricket Board a while ago on the podcast now, Wasim Khan, and he talked a lot about that sort of assimilation when he came in as chief executive and the sort of political nature of the way that the sort of board works. So yeah, kind of interesting that they described the decision with Misbah stepping down and Wacker as honourable, which, yeah, I guess is a sort of an objective. It's kind of one of those things, you know, we wish them all the best in, you know, their future endeavours, but very quickly they've got the next guys lined up. So look, I'm sure that's got plenty to run. Lippy, across to you for the White Ferns update. So you wanted them to give you some hope. Have they delivered?
Absolutely. I mean, I know there's only been two games, and they were beaten fairly comfortably in the first T20, and super innings from Tammy Beaumont. As an aside, just love watching her bat. She's a real treat to watch. Absolute class. And I know you know that as an English supporter, Binksy, but yeah, absolutely love that. You know, even though it was against New Zealand, but I think what I know I've talked a few times about the White Ferns and just kind of being able to, as a New Zealand fan, you just want to be able to feel that they can win against the top sides and that they can pull out that kind of game. I know internally a lot of the stuff coming out of the camp is all about consistency, and obviously that's what we want, you know, and that's what the Black Caps have done so well in recent times. They've played really well and they've put performances back to back to back. And, you know, like I said, they've only played two games here because, and I think they've still got six games over there against England. There's, you know, one more T20 at the end of the week and then into five ODIs. And so, you know, maybe in a week or so, a couple of weeks, I might be, you know, singing a different tune. But, you know, so far, I think just the fact that they've gone over there, it's away from home. They've come from, you know, no real cricket over in our New Zealand winter. And they've gone over there and beaten a very strong England side in their own conditions. I think that gives us as fans, and it gives hopefully them, a lot of confidence that they can then do that in the T20 World Cup.
Yeah, it was a good performance by New Zealand in that second ODI to limit the English top order. Of course, they ran riot in the first game and made 180 in their 20 overs. And Lee Casbrick and Jess Kerr in particular turned it around in that second game. You know, 2 for 20 and 1 for 23 off their 8 overs combined. Really limited England's chances to post a big first inning score. And then New Zealand were able to have solid contributions at the top of the order. Little bit of a wobble in the middle, but they managed to get home. But a great return for Sophie Devine in this series, Stuart, celebrating her 100th match.
Oh, look, it's just an absolute treat when something like that, you know, a milestone game actually comes off and delivers how you want it to deliver. Because, I mean, you know, let's take a step back. Sophie Devine, she's been such a brilliant kind of advocate and such an ambassador for, you know, women's cricket and you know, the kind of person that you want to represent your side. She's, you know, recently spoken a lot about her mental health, which is, and kind of normalizing that conversation, which is, you know, something we've touched on here a lot, and how great it is that she's just able to feel comfortable with that, you know, even the last press conference I saw her doing that, and it's brilliant. And, you know, I heard her talk about how she, you know, she just didn't feel like herself, and now she's starting to feel ready to perform again. And yeah, it's just brilliant. Binksy, you want to jump in before I say something else?
Yeah, look, I guess I just wanted to make a point on that mental health comment. And look, I think particularly sport, because it's visible to a large extent, I think is almost in some ways leading the way in terms of having this conversation, particularly around the world with lots and lots of different lockdown situations. And a lot of organizations have sort of started to talk openly about, you know, actually having a mental health day when, you know, when you need to kind of take a day off, when your mental health isn't as good as your physical health, potentially. You don't have a second thought when you've got a sore throat or a cold of taking that day off, but really sort of having that conversation around how you produce your best day in, day out, and sort of acknowledging that. So look, I just really hope that those kind of conversations continue, because I think they're for us as people that love the game of cricket, cricket can mirror, you know, some of the things that society picks up on as well. So yeah, really, really some strong comments, and she's a great advocate for those in the modern game.
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, I couldn't echo those words more. Just on the actual game and her performance, I think what you know, we've talked a lot about how we haven't really got those big performances recently from the big names in New Zealand. You know, you touched on a few of the bowlers, Baldy, and actually the bowlers have done a reasonable job in our home summer, but the batters probably are the ones that would feel like they had more to offer. And, you know, if you look at Sophie Devine's recent scores for the White Ferns, you're looking at like 15-2, 8-0, 17-2. Just hasn't been able to kind of kick on and play these innings that we know are match-winning innings. She's, you know, she's such a devastating cricketer. And, you know, I mean, she in that game, if you go back and watch, there's a couple of enormous sixes. She's such a clean hitter of the ball. And, you know, it shows that if we can, we've got the players there that can pull off these wins and match winners. And if they can kind of click at the right time and kind of build some momentum here, there's sort of things to be excited about as a White Ferns fan. And, you know, obviously I love to talk about Sophie Devine, a bit of a Riccarton connection there. So, always happy to get that in the podcast.
Well, let's move from the White Ferns to the Black Caps. Raj, you were pretty pumped for this series. A lot of people might say the cricket hasn't been super exciting, but I'll ask the same question. Has it delivered for you, this series in Bangladesh?
Yeah, you know, I'm a bit indifferent towards it, I guess. I feel like we're not really finding out much about these players, which was one of my key things going into the series, is that these are new players to the international scene. But we have a pitch here where both teams are really struggling to play on. The best bowlers for us at the moment are players who are either batsmen, you know, in Ruchin Ravindra and Cole, or Ajaz Patel, someone who isn't really being considered for white ball cricket going forward. Other highlights, we've got Tom Latham batted really well in that second game, where he probably batted where he should, up the order a little bit more. A low light in Colin de Gronholm, really struggling for me. His best feature is his economical bowling with that white ball, and he's not able to use that in the conditions that... Sorry?
Or his helmet hair.
Or his helmet hair. He's not able to bowl at the moment in the conditions that they've got. I definitely feel like I'm guilty at the moment of looking past this series and really looking forward to that Pakistan series in the next couple of weeks.
Literally, Stuart, to you, though, with the spin that's playing a part, you must be frothing over this to an extent.
Yeah, well, look, I want to push back on a couple of those things from Raj, really, because I feel it's been a strangely captivating series for me. I've actually loved, you know, I've watched every single ball so far. We're three games in. You know, by the time this podcast comes out, there might be another game or two that goes. And look, you know, it's actually been pretty tough going. I kind of wish they started at least an hour earlier, sort of going to bed at 1 a.m. in the morning. 1:30 in the morning is not ideal when you've got small children. But look, I think that we have learned a bit about some of these players, and I know probably my lean is towards those spinners, but I think that first game was really disappointing in that, you know, the pitch for a start was just, it was incapable. It was, I think the pitch, that was the worst of the pitches, and it was a pitch that you just couldn't score runs quickly on, and you couldn't even really build an innings. It was a kind of game where, you know, even Bangladesh struggled when they were only chasing 60. But I think the way that we've gone about the next two games, it feels like those cricketers have actually learned a lot. They're very unfamiliar conditions, but we've been able to see even someone like Ruchin Ravindra. He started with a golden duck. He's then his first over in international cricket was pretty average. Got hit for a few boundaries, got hit for about 10 or 11, I think, and it, you know, chasing 60, which is what, 1/6 of the runs. So that probably, you know, didn't feel very good. But the way he's been able to come back and kind of figure out lengths and areas to bowl and things, and even the way he batted in that third game, it shows to me that there is some growth, and I've actually kind of loved that.
Stu, for these guys that are playing in this, which, let's not call it a second 11, but there are guys in here that normally wouldn't feature in a full-strength New Zealand side. Who for you through the first three matches in this series has enhanced their reputation or their case to become a regular fixture once we see New Zealand back on our shores this summer?
Well, I think you know, it's going to come as no surprise. I think the three spinners have all done a really good job, actually. They've, you know, Ajaz has been, look, he's been a shining light. And he really has, every single time he goes overseas and plays in helpful conditions, you know, obviously there's no getting around that they are very helpful conditions for spin. But he's just bang on the money, you know. He just drops it on a line and length every single time. He's got nice little change-ups, and he's just delivering every single time we go overseas and really putting his hand up to feature in some of these games that we've got coming up. in the subcontinent and things. So, you know, it's very tricky for him to feature at home. It's always going to be the case when we've got the likes of Ish and Mitch Santner, who kind of offer different things in New Zealand conditions. But, you know, he's done himself a real service over there. And look, like I said, Rutchin's done really well. Been very impressed with him. And Cole, I'm very biased when I'm watching Cole, obviously, knowing him well. But look, I think he's done a great job, you know, for someone to come in and perform at that level. He's been tasked with early overs. Looks like it's coming out really nicely. And yeah, I think he's bowled beautifully. Probably the one person I will add to that is Tom Latham, because he's, you know, Raj mentioned before he got runs in that second game. What's almost impressed me more is his captaincy and his and the way he's gone about the batting in the scenario, and his keeping, actually, because his keeping's been really, really tidy on tricky conditions. I think I can't remember him really missing the ball at all. And just his captaincy, you know, I sort of, you know, having done some captaincy in the past, I kind of loved sitting there watching the game and I'll go, oh, look, this guy should be bowling next. This guy should be bowling next. You know, trying to figure out the game in my head. And just about every single thing that I've had a thought, oh, you know, if he did this, that would work. Or, you know, if he did this, you know, we could create a wicket here. Will he do this? It's all Tom Latham has got a lot. You can see that he's thinking a lot of different things and the way he's bringing in and rotating our spinners, Ajaz in particular, to kind of get the best out of them has been very, very impressive. And I wonder if they are now sitting there thinking, geez, it'd be nice to have him in that T20 World Cup squad.
On the flip side of the coin, it hasn't been a great series for Colin de Grondholm, as you mentioned, Raj. Is this a concern for New Zealand, that the form of Colin de Grondholm looking forward to this summer, given that he's probably likely to be there or thereabouts, maybe now behind Neesham and potentially also Daryl Mitchell in this white ball setup for New Zealand?
For me, it's personally not an issue. I don't see him playing the role in those games that he is playing in these games. He's not going to be there to bat at four and offer a little bit with the seam if the spinners don't do the job. He's going to be there bowling his 10 overs or his four overs, restricting batsmen in that middle part of the innings, and then coming out and closing in innings if we need it. So I don't see it as a big issue for him. However, it would be nice to see him score some runs in these next two games. Lippy?
Oh, no, I mean, that kind of sums it up, isn't it? It would be nice to see him score some runs. Absolutely. I mean, you know, I am a little worried about Colin just in terms of how far he's falling down the pecking order, I think, in those, particularly in the white ball formats, you know, especially being picked, Daryl Mitchell being picked ahead of him, I think is quite a clear sign that, you know, he's fallen down a little bit. And with Neesham and other people in that area, he's going to have to turn it around. But, you know, I sort of was having this conversation with another friend of mine, and he pointed out that, you know, he pretty much has been out for a long time. It's been a very weird year for him the last 12 months. Hasn't played a lot of cricket. So, yeah, I think probably Raj's comment is a more reasonable comment and something we should really stick with.
I think the thing for me, just to wrap up on this, I think is that it's probably going to confuse things a little bit when it comes to that T20 World Cup. We haven't really seen a great deal from the seamers, but who would want to bowl seam on those wickets, to be perfectly honest? It's a pretty thankless task. Even someone that's played a lot of franchise cricket, Mustafizur Rahim for Bangladesh, has struggled with his economy rate. The good thing for Colin de Grondholm, though, and LBW, I think, in the third game, but I'll tell you what, he creamed the two that he's hit straight down the fielder's throat. So at least his timing is there, if nothing else. Well, look, that just about wraps up this week in cricket, our little whiz around the world. We will be back after the break to talk the purest form of the game, and that's Test cricket, England, India at the Kia Oval in London.
Well, another podcast, another defeat for England, this time against India at the Kia Oval by some margin, actually, on day five. Of course, it wouldn't be a top order podcast and an India-England test review without Binksy coming off the long run. So we're just going to open the mic up. We're all going to be silent. And Binksy, what have you got for us?
Well, boys, I've just said off air, I'm actually not going to go on a massive rant here. I'm going to be relatively pragmatic about this. And I've actually even got some notes to back this stuff up as well. So, look, for me, it was kind of to be expected, if I'm perfectly honest. And when I actually reflect on it, let's just look at a little bit of history. A little bit like Gavrilo Princip being the catalyst for World War One, when he assassinated the Archduke Franz Ferdinand. We've seen the signs here of what was going to happen in terms of this unrest. And perhaps that victory that England managed to burgle last time round was just them punching a little bit above their weight. If we actually look at this, India handed our arses to us in India, save that first test match that was played on a pretty good wicket. And they did that playing a formula that suited them at home with the spin of, you know, Axar Patel, Ravi Ashwin and others. They've come over to England and I think they've got their formula dead right again. And look, I think Virat Kohli's probably been proved right in terms of sticking with his trusted formula of Jadeja. I know, Lippy, you'll probably have something to say about, you know, the game would have finished on day three if Ravi Ashwin had played. But India were just better. Rohit Sharma showed everybody how to construct a really, really good first innings second innings score. England didn't bat big enough in that first innings. They didn't really take advantage of being in a very, very good position. And to be honest, they didn't take advantage of being in a pretty strong position at 140 for two in that second innings. How do you go from 140 for two to 210 all out on what was still a pretty good wicket, let's be honest. England dropped six or seven catches. There's some worries around the workloads of their seamers. And Jadeja's economy rate, I won't have the stats, but I'd imagine he went for around about twos. Moeen Ali, it seemed, couldn't be trusted to provide that control with the ball. So every single time, Root had to go back and throw the ball to Anderson or Robinson, who, to be honest, have been flogged like dead horses in this test match. And I think it's highly likely that one or both of them is going to have to miss this game coming up at Old Trafford as well. So I should have probably started with the cliche of credit to the other side. But that's really where this lands for me. You've got to give a massive amount of credit to India for getting their selections right again. Thakur had a tremendous test match as well. Bumrah, I don't think you can underrate his little twofer. He really did give some impetus to that second innings. And it feels the right result for an England side that just really aren't good enough.
That's it's very measured from you, and I think I'm interested to hear what Raj and Baldy you have to say, because I feel like it's been such a weird series, this one, in terms of the overreactions. I know we talked a lot about our overreactions last week and how we kind of got it all wrong, but maybe we didn't. You know, maybe we just, there was, I think Raj mentioned last week that he thought it was just a blip, you know, kind of one of those 36 all out moments where actually India had been playing some good cricket. They had a bad moment and they lost the test, and, you know, normal service has potentially resumed. But, you know, 3 days ago, everyone online wanted half the Indian team dropped. It seemed like the England side had kind of found the answers to their question. They'd found Ollie Robinson in the last few months. Ollie Pope had come back. He looked really good. You know, Hamid is starting to score some runs. You know, fast forward to now, India's the best team in the world and England's terrible. It's kind of like, what do we make of all of this?
Well, the first thing I make of it is that India were 5 for 100 on day one after 42 overs when Virat was dismissed. That is a massive, massive win in the first session and a half for England on day one. To have Kohli out, he got 50 in this test match, so he got to 50 finally in the series. You know, he's had a couple of good innings, Kohli, but he hasn't quite kicked on. England were in the box seat, 127 for 7 when Punt was dismissed for 9 off 33 deliveries. And then it was England were in the driving seat there, but Shardul Thakur, as you mentioned, Binks, he turned it around, some great batting in both innings, 57 off 36, the fastest half century by an Indian batter, really took the momentum away from England from 127 for 7 by the time he was dismissed with a score at 190. Then, of course, India fell away. In that England first innings, again, 1 for 5, 2 for 6, the opener's not doing the job. And then it was 5 for 60. So having given England the advantage. India were able to wrest it back, or if you like to take the other perspective, England grabbed the advantage but weren't able to hold on to it while they had it. And, of course, England then collapsed for 60 to 60 for five, and then sort of Johnny Bairstow and Ollie Pope had to wrest the control back. So it was a real seesawing test match, this one. Both sides really had an opportunity to take the initiative. England's catching for mine really let them down. You know, they dropped Rohit twice. He went on to make 100. India win by 150 or whatever it is. They allowed Pant and Shardul and Umesh Yadav and Bumrah to bat together again at the bottom of the order. This time it was probably a case of good batting rather than poor bowling. But, you know, England had opportunities to get themselves into this test match and just weren't able to take advantage of those key moments.
Yeah, I 100% agree with what you guys have been saying. I guess I kind of just want to highlight a couple of players and we can go through them and just talk about them individually. I'm really surprised Shardul Thakur did not get the man of the match. I think his contributions to both or all of the innings, all four of the innings, cannot be discounted. The way he played kept India in the match and put them ahead of the match in that third innings there. The one guy I also want to talk about is Rohit Sharma. It was really good to see him actually finally get over the line with that 100, because that is a massive sort of, I'm going to use the word blip again, in his career, not having a 100 outside of India. He's also batted consistently this series. He's been scoring runs consistently without getting that big one. It's a real testament to his temperament and really batting with discipline. You saw when Rahul did it in the second test, he also scored a big 100 as well.
Just to pick up quickly on Sharma before you carry on, Raj, I just want to kind of reiterate that, because I absolutely loved watching him bat in the series. I've been betting on him for top Indian run scorer in every innings, just because he just looks so good. He looks like someone who is prepared to put in the yards on these hard wickets. And I know we've talked about that a lot, you know, for different players and how guys are just nicking off and all this stuff. But Rohit Sharma looks like someone who's really prepared to dig in. And, you know, some of those drive, you know, he hit a straight drive, I think, on the morning of day three. It was just one of those shots that you just kind of go, oh, yes, wow. And, you know, you actually verbally speak out loud when you're sitting there watching in your room by yourself. And, you know, it, just amazing. And I've listened to a lot of this test on the SEN commentary, while the Bangladeshi commentators haven't really been doing it for me in the New Zealand series, so I've just been flicking them off and listening to the England-India test. And Jared Kimber was on there, and he's, you know, he's obviously someone who's a friend of the podcast and you know, someone we've really enjoyed listening to over the past wee while. And he talked about the process, you know, for Rohit Sharma, it's been the process of going from 30 to 100, which has been the really, it's sort of the difficult thing for someone who becomes an opener later on in their career. And it was a fascinating chat. He sort of talked about it with thinking about Shane Watson as well, as someone who kind of started their career in the lower order. They go up to the top. They have to work so hard on kind of those first 30 runs that when they then have to convert and build the innings later on, it actually becomes quite tricky. And it looks like Rohit is, you know, hopefully starting to figure that out, because he's, you know, he's obviously piling on a lot of runs, at least outside or in India. And then, you know, hopefully this is a sign of things to come for him, because I just love watching him bat.
So I just, I also want to talk about Jadeja as well. I'm going to throw to you, Binksy. So a couple of questions about Jadeja. So batting at five, what do you make of that? In reality, is he just a stopgap solution for Rahane, pushing him down the order a bit so he didn't have to face that 20-over-old ball? And then finally, you did mention it earlier, him, Virat Kohli, saying at the start, which I don't agree with, saying that he had a better matchup than Ravi Ashwin against the English left-handed batsman. It's hard to argue with him when they win, but I'm not sure if I agree with that one.
Yeah, so look, before I get on to Jadeja, yeah, just want to echo the comments on Sharma. And he's got to have a shout for being one of the best three format players going around with the bat when you look at his stats across T20s, ODIs and tests now. And he's got that monkey off his back with a test 100 overseas. So, look, I love watching him bat, and I really love watching him bat for the Mumbai Indians as well. On Jadeja, when he came out and batted at five in the first innings, I just thought they were maybe thinking about it for some reason as a matchup thing, you know, getting a left-hand, right-hand combination going. But then obviously it happened in the second innings as well. So look, that to me is a pretty strange one, and just shows a little bit of a lack of confidence in a guy that has actually been pretty good for India over the past 4 or 5 years in Ajinkya Rahane. So I just wonder whether that's done a little bit of damage, you know, to a guy that, you know, his test average has dipped below 40, but still, a pretty decent player. We go back to that Australia series, scored some important runs there. Lippy, I think you want to come in on that as well.
No, I'll come in on that one. I actually think it's a good thing for India because it allows Punt to bat at seven. And I think he's much more comfortable there because he can dash with the tail. We saw it in the second innings. Even though he scored 50 off 106, his slowest ever first-class 50 for Rishabh Pant, he's kind of figured out, I can't remember who said it, but someone said it in the press that, you know, he's got every shot in the book, but up until now, he's tried to play all of them off every ball. He kind of put a few shots away for a little while in that second innings, and he actually looks a much, much more complete cricketer as a result. I think it actually really suits him, batting at seven, and then having Thakur, who can bat below him at eight, who also likes to attack, and those guys can just go hammer and tongs as soon as they get together. I think that suits his game a little bit more rather than having to have that extra responsibility of batting in the top six. So having Jadeja in there to kind of hang around in between Kohli and Rahane to form that kind of key partnership in the middle, and then have Rishabh Pant and Thakur come in at the bottom of the order and then just go hell for leather, I think that really works for that Indian setup.
I'm going to steal something I saw off on Twitter here, just to pick up on what you said about Punt and playing all the shots. I think I saw someone say, my favourite bit about watching cricket is when Rishabh Pant runs down the wicket, plays an attacking shot, and the cameraman has to quickly pan the whole field to try and figure out where the ball's gone. It was just brilliant. But, you know, absolutely. And, you know, we've been criticising him, you know, hopefully in a constructive way over this entire series and, you know, stretching back to that World Test Championship final. And you know, he delivered the exact innings that they needed at that time.
Baldy, I'm going to throw back to you on Thakur. You enjoyed his batting down at eight. And yeah, on Pant as well, I just want to say he's kept really well. I've been really, really impressed with the way that he's gloved the ball through the series because England's a difficult place to keep, as we've talked about a fair bit. So yeah, he's done a good job with the gloves as well.
Yeah, I've been a broken clock this week. I've been wrong all the time except for the two times I've been right. One of them was Punt having a little bit more introspection and maybe playing a little bit within himself. And the other one was Shardul Thakur and his batting and also his ability to swing the ball. So he generated good swing. He generated a little bit of reverse there in the second innings as well. I think he got the key wicket of Joe Root in the second innings. So, you know, a good return to the side for him. He just balances that attack really quite nicely for me, as opposed to Ishant, because he can swing the ball a little bit. And his impact batting at number eight for India in this test match, huge, absolutely huge.
I did want to mention Chris Wokes as well. It was really great for me to see him come back and sort of impose himself on this game with both the bat and the ball. I think he's been a massive sort of missing piece for that England squad over the last 12 months or so in red ball cricket. Just imagine him with the likes of Anderson and Robinson and a Jofra Archer or a Stuart Broad. It instantly makes that England bowling attack look really fearsome for me. I was looking at his stats at home. They're incredible. He's averaging 22.64 at home with a strike rate of 44.55, which is absolutely world class. So, I think it was good for him to come back. Unfortunately, couldn't get the win, but I think it was good to see him perform well.
Yeah, look, he's just such a nice guy as well. Comes across really well in the media. For me, and it's going to be a pretty big call, he would have been probably one of the best swing bowlers going around in the world if James Anderson hadn't have been in his way for the vast majority of his career. You know, bowls a similar pace, similar lengths, so probably has missed out on occasions. For me, and just to pick up on Raj's point, it's just what he adds. He's actually a genuine, a genuine third seamer and a guy that can really, really hold a bat at seven. You can throw him the ball in almost any, certainly any home conditions, and he'll do a really, really stand-up job for you. So, look, yeah, look, I think he, for me, jumps well ahead of Curran now in the pecking order for that spot. If that's, you know, if they are going to, in inverted commas, try and replace Ben Stokes, which is a pretty difficult task to do as an all-rounder. I think that Wokes and look, Moeen Ali, who had a poor test match here, are the two guys that I think between them can fill the shoes of Ben Stokes collectively.
Yeah, look, let's stay with England for a little bit here because, you know, I think I've almost feel like I've almost been higher on England than anyone else in the room, I was going to say, but, you know, on this little screen that I'm looking at the moment. But because, you know, I feel like, you know, with Pope coming back and the signs that you know, he looked relatively good scoring that 80. We've seen what Wokes can do when he comes back. You mentioned Stokes before, someone that's not there. Hamid's come in and scored runs. You know, I actually think that they're not actually that far away from being a decent side. And I think there's been a lot of overreaction in this series and obviously after this game as well of, you know, gee, England's terrible and they're such an awful side and they've really put white ball cricket to the forefront and that's had a massive impact on Test cricket. And I don't really want to deny that because I do kind of agree with some of that light that, you know, they've definitely prioritised white ball cricket and it's having an impact on guys like Ben Stokes and Joss Butler and other players who are, you know, in those games, so it means they're missing test matches. And, you know, maybe that even goes for Moeen Ali going back to India and going away from those games. But, you know, I just feel like the negativity around England is maybe going a step too far.
Yeah, let me just throw to Baldy and let me frame the question for him because, look, I agree there's probably a few, if we were talking about an economic recovery, there's a few green shoots there in terms of that England side. You know, Hamid has looked good, but then's immediately thrown it away both times he's got to 50 in this series. I think Rory Burns again, you know, immediately gets to 50, gets out. Ollie Pope for me, I actually liked the fact that the Night Watchman had come in at, I think, 5 in Overton because I think Pope batting at 6, that's actually probably the spot for him. I think he's a little bit too high coming in potentially at 5. But my question to Baldy is this, like, if there are, you know, some reasonable signs around England cricket, which I don't think there are in the short term, who's he scared of when we do make it down on a plane, hopefully to Brisbane in November? Because there ain't too many that are going to worry you either, Baldy.
Well, I think Hamid instead of Sibley is a massive step in the right direction for England just because he started the rot in the second innings by running out Dawood Malan, and that really started the massive collapse that really sealed the test match for India. But up until that point, he's been a positive runner between the wickets. He's looked to work the ball on both sides of the square and get off strike, and that helps Rory Burns a little bit, whereas I think he got bogged down, both of them, when Burns and Sibley were batting together. I think they're a better opening pair. Joe Root obviously is the key wicket, you know, if you're looking forward to that Ashes series, and if Ben Stokes comes into play as well, he's another one. The bowling attack is starting to have a nice, well-rounded look about it. You throw Broad back in there, you potentially throw Archer in there, or Wood, someone with genuine pace, and England have got a pretty good bowling attack to take to Australian conditions. Ollie Robinson can nibble it around a bit at round about, you know, 80 miles an hour, somewhere in that 135, 140 range. Obviously, Jimmy Anderson and Stuart Broad as well probably will feature in that series. I think England need to find a number 3. I like Dawood Malan. I'm not sure that he's the long-term option, but he has looked in a lot better spot than, say, Crawley or Dan Lawrence so far this series. Ollie Pope I really like as a cricketer, but I'm not quite sure whether or not he has got enough runs under his belt to have that inner confidence to go to Australia and make big hundreds. Hopefully for England he can. The thing about that batting lineup is that guys need to get in there. Once they get to 50 or 60 or 80, to go on and make big hundreds, that's the thing that's going to make Australia sit up and take notice and go, well, shit, we have to really plan for these guys. At the moment, I don't think Australia would be looking at that batting lineup for England and planning for anyone really other than Joe Root to be making big hundreds against them. If England can do that, if they can find other guys to get in there and make a big hundred, then that's going to be the thing that I think Australia will be thinking, well, shit, we've got to really plan. Because the Australians aren't in great form themselves. Some of their bowlers have been bowling okay, but, you know, there's lots of questions about the Australian batting lineup as well, particularly in that 3 and 5 area.
Let's move on to Test Match 5, which is a pretty tight turnaround. So I think game starts on Friday, I think, UK time, at Old Trafford, which is Jimmy Anderson's home ground. Let's talk a little bit about, any potential changes. So, Lippy, we won't cover off Ashwin in, because we've done that four times already. I don't think that's going to happen. But in all seriousness, a bit of a scare for the Indian team with Ravi Shastri and Bharat Arun from the coaching staff testing positive. They won't be around the group. And you've got to say, it's highly unlikely that, you know, players haven't been close contacts of those guys. So, I guess watch Crick Info for that breaking news banner. But any COVID scares aside, what do we see India doing for that fifth and final test match?
Well, of course, we have to remember that neither Rohit nor Chetheshwar Pujara took the field on day five of that victory at the Oval. Both of them, I think, sent for scans, but I'm pretty sure that that's just precautionary and those guys will have had a little bit of rest, perhaps. But maybe they're carrying niggles and, you know, a hammy or a calf, something like that. So that's also one to watch. Unless there's a COVID change or those guys have picked up a niggle, I don't think India will change their side for that final test. I think everyone's ready to go. The bowlers have bowled workloads, but not too excessive that I don't think they'd be able to back up. And certainly a couple of those guys who have taken key wickets in that second innings would be raring to go at Old Trafford.
I would love, I think there's a chance that we see Mohammad Shami come back and possibly for Siraj, just given the fact that he played those four tests, not necessarily the fact that, you know, hasn't bowled well, because he's been pretty reasonable in this series. But I think, probably picking up on something one of you guys said earlier about England's bowling stocks and just how, you know, Robinson and Anderson have been burned into the ground, really. And I think it goes back to, I think, something Raj said a few weeks ago, and that the bowling stocks of England have been depleted by all of these injuries, and it hadn't really shown a negative impact until this test, I think. And we really saw the real workload that these guys have had put in. And we haven't really, you know, like you say, we're in a situation where we're coming into the final test of the series, and they might have to be rested almost, you know, potentially both of them. You know, I don't know how they're doing. Obviously, it's a really short turnaround, but they both looked a lot more tired than they did at the start of the series, which is not a big surprise. But I think from India's point of view, you saw the guys that came in and the impact that they were able to bring. And even with Wokes, just having a bowler who's a bit fresher and can come in makes me thinking India might make a change. As much as I want to see Ashwin play again, it just doesn't seem like Virat's going to do it.
So for me, I think that they'll make a change in the bowling department there. I think Shami will have a rest, and they'll bring in at least one of Sharma if he's recovered, and Mohammad Shami. One of those people will play, if not both of them. With the batting, I don't think that they'll go down the line of dropping Rahane for this one game. I reckon they'll give him one more chance, and then they'll start having a look at it. They do have a few batsmen there, one with a really, really long name, so I might get bored to try and pronounce that a bit later on. With England, so yeah, Jimmy Anderson, he's bowled 163 overs so far in this four test series. I'll throw to you, Binksy. Who are you nominating to go and tell him that he's not coming out bowling from the Jimmy Anderson end at Lancashire?
So look, I think that the only thing I would say here is that Robinson and Anderson don't have any more cricket to play now in this English summer, so they can put their feet up and plan ahead for November and getting themselves to Australia. Obviously, the only conversation that's going to be going on is how close are they to that red zone that they talk about, because, you know, a hamstring pull or something that's going to keep you out for 6 or 8 weeks means you're probably not on the plane down to Australia. So that's probably the only concern. So I think they might have to ask them both to play again, with perhaps the pragmatic person in me saying that Anderson's not going to, as you say, rock up at Old Trafford and carry the drinks at his home ground and his home end. They might sort of say to Robinson, mate, you know, you're on the plane. This is a workload thing. We've got Mark Wood that can kind of come in on a pitch that's typically a little bit quicker. The interesting one for me, though, really, is the return or not of Joss Butler. So he's been off on parental leave. I think pictured on Instagram with his new arrival. Him and his wife, obviously, giving birth this past week. I think he comes back in. And the reason I think he comes back in is they want him on that plane to Australia as an option. Ask the question of Baldy, you know, who do you fear? And I'd say that Australia, you know, if England are in a pretty decent position at any point during that series at 300 for five, they wouldn't want to see Joss Butler stride into the crease, that, you know, they'd probably rather see someone else. So I think they've got to play him in this game. Otherwise, I think he takes the decision that he probably hangs up the red ball gloves and concentrates on the white ball stuff.
What about Overton? So he was probably one of the, I'm not going to say one of the reasons, but he was one of the reasons that Jimmy and Ollie Robertson had to bowl a lot more overs than they had to. As we said earlier, Moeen Ali and Overton didn't really restrict those runs or put pressure on from one end. So do you think that he is likely to play? And I guess I'm kind of asking, has he done enough to retain his spot, or you know, rest and rotation aside, would he be dropped for you for this next test?
I think it comes down to whether Mark Wood plays or not. If he does, then I think he comes straight in for Overton. I think Wokes will probably keep his spot. So for me, I think the change is probably going to be Wood in for Overton. And then, yeah, they might have a look at what they do with Ollie Robinson. You might see a Sam Curran come back in. You might see Saqib Mahmood get a game as well. So, you know, he's someone that I think they probably don't necessarily want to have a look at in a test match, which, you know, could bring the series to a tie. But if they want to potentially put him on the plane to Australia, now is really the only chance to have a look at him in that that test match environment. So there's options there for England. But to answer your question succinctly, Raj, I don't think Overton plays in the next game. So we'll close on predictions for the final test match coming up at Old Trafford, and hopefully this podcast hitting your airwaves and before we get too much of a head start on this, with the game already having started potentially. But I'm going to come round the proverbial table. I'll start in my top left, which is Michael Baldwin. What are you thinking for this game at Old Trafford? Is it 3-1 India, or can England cause what we think would be an upset?
Yes, I think India win the test match and win the series 3-1. I think it will be close again. I think England have, for me, not taken the opportunities that they've had so far in this series to really wrest control of it. India have won the key moments, and I expect them to do so again.
Raj?
Yeah, I think India again, mainly for a lot of the reasons that we've talked about just now. I think the English bowlers have bowled a lot this series, especially Jimmy, who's been incredible throughout the whole series. And I think with Virat Kohli, I feel like he is about to break free of that cocoon and become a beautiful butterfly. So watch for that in the next test. So 3-1 final score for me.
Yeah. Look, I can't go away from that either. So 3-1 for me. I think India just too strong. And I don't want to steal Lippy's thunder, but I hope Ravi Ashwin gets a game in this last one to make our little off spinner happy.
Oh, it'd make me very, very happy. It would make, I tell you what, it would make cricket Twitter very happy. I honestly, the first 4 days, I think, of that game, pretty much the whole time, top order timeline, when I scrolled down, it was filled with, I said earlier, it was filled with people who thought half the Indian team should be dropped. The only other interludes there were, I can't believe Ashwin's not playing in this game. Geez, Ashwin would be going really well in that day five. Oh boy, India really need Ashwin on day five if they're going to play. This pitch looks really flat. And, I did agree. But, yeah, I mean, going back to the predictions, it's going to be a clean sweep for us here. It's 3-1 for me, you know, primarily because I said 3-1 at the start of the series. But also because, you know, as I've said earlier, I think England have been better in this series than people have given them credit for. I really do. I think they've competed very well in a lot of parts, but Baldy hit the nail on the head just before by saying that India have won the key moments. And I would also go as far to say as England have kind of lost those key moments as well. You know, when the time has come for someone to step up, or, you know, we need one more wicket here and we're going to make the breakthrough, or we really just need one big partnership here to kick on. It just hasn't happened. And it's tended to not happen in a really disastrous way. Either there's been a big partnership put on against them, or they've lost wickets in clumps. And yeah, I can't see them turning that around again. Although I do think it'll be another competitive, enjoyable test.
Awesome. Well, guys, that wraps up another remote recording of the Top Order podcast. We will be back in your feeds with more Cricketing Hall of Fame. We'll also be back with another This Week in Cricket to wrap up what's going on in this England-India series and a whole host of other stuff as well. Please do, as always, dip back into the back catalogue if you've run out of current episodes in your little feed. We've got some fantastic news, views and interviews from all over the world in the back catalogue. But for now, it's good night and God bless from all of us here in Auckland. Stay safe if you're in a bubble, and we'll see you in a week's time. Good night.
Sports Social Podcast Network.